I've taught you much, my little Drugies. Now tell me what you had in mind, Georgie boy.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Pretty Much Film Podcast. I'm your host, Justin.
And I'm your co-host, Marcel.
Come and get one in the yarbles, if you have any yarbles.
Together, we will be watching and reviewing different films each episode with different friends of ours.
What did you do that for?
For being a bastard with no manners. Not a duke of an idea how to comport yourself public-wise, oh my brother.
These shows will be spoiler-filled and contain harsh language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Oh, it was gorgeousness and gorgeousity made flesh.
Hey guys, welcome to our very first episode of Pretty Much Film. This week we're going to be recording Stanley Kubrick's 1971 classic, A Clockwork Orange. With me this week is my co-host, Marcel.
Howdy, everyone.
Sean.
How's it going?
Ben.
Hello.
Alonzo.
What's up, guys?
And myself, Justin. All right, how you guys doing today?
I'm doing all right. Just,
all right.
Yeah, I'm pretty good.
I'm craving some milk right now. That's what I'm
there
craving.
There you go, the Malacca Plus. So, this movie, I think we've all seen it except for Marcel, right? Or Alonzo, had you seen it too?
Yeah, this is my first
time. Yeah, I've seen this.
So yeah, Marcel,
this was my first time watching.
Nice. I have to hear like some of your first thoughts on it.
If I were to how do I explain this movie? It felt like it was like a chaotic Dr. Seuss. Like, I don't know. Like the audio was like all over. Like the music was great, but then when it came to like the dialogue, I was like, what the fuck am I watching? It felt like similar to I guess the closest thing I can think of it was like The Dark Knight Returns when they would like, you know, talk like in the future. Like they would have this weird like just dialogue and just slang.
It's something William S. Burroughs made up himself for like this like Russian slang. And because it's supposed to be set like in the 90s, I believe, in London and kind of semi-future and what's going to happen. I guess I can kind of read a synopsis like. In the future, Britain, Alex DeLarge, a charismatic and psychopath delinquent who likes to practice crimes and ultra-violence with his gang, is jailed and volunteers for an experimental aversion therapy developed by government in an effort to solve society's crime problem. And so, I mean, it's kind of the basis
ultra-violence
of
ultra-violence is one of my favorite things that came about this movie.
I love that. Yeah. I mean, how can you not like all the fun language that they make, and like Stanley Kubrick's as a master, and so
if you read the book is like so overpopulated with this slang, it's kind of hard to read.
It has an appendix.
A glossary in the back. Like this is what
it is, but it also has that complete extra chapter.
Yeah. There's a whole 25th chapter to the book.
Change the entire point of the book.
Yeah, right.
It does actually change the entire point of the entire book. But.
Yeah, it does. For those of you who don't know, the movie ends with on kind of an ambiguous note where Alec believes that Alex isn't fully cured, but the book actually goes on and says that he is fine and he's just well adjusted and.
Yeah, he goes on. You see him in his career and later.
Because he goes through the rehabilitation thing, and he comes out, and then he ends up, almost killing himself.
Right? Yeah, at the end of the book.
And then he ends up almost killing himself, and then the doctors reverse the conditioning, and he goes back to his life of crime, but then it has it to where he actually gets bored of that and realizes that he wants a normal life.
And so I've heard
ultra violence is not the way, even without the conditioning.
I've heard different reasons why the film doesn't include it. Some say that,
it's because Kubrick didn't read that chapter.
Well, also, I've read that Kubrick...
The American version of the book doesn't have that chapter, it didn't have that chapter.
It didn't
when
for
it
a
first
long time,
out.
And I read also, though, that Kubrick did it out of respect for Burroughs, that Burroughs actually did not write that chapter, and he wanted to publish that book, but they said that the book was too short, and so he came up with a whole extra chapter. And so
I've heard that Burroughs was mad... that Kubrick didn't
And maybe he was, like I said, I've heard different things, but
Kubrick's always been known to rub the
now he,
authors
I know Burroughs is mad that, that he wanted his book to be popular on its own, and he thinks the movie overshadows the book, which it definitely does, probably.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah, with I didn't even know it was a
it
book.
It does, but Burgess also hates the book with, like, a passion.
Yeah.
Yeah, that it's, like, one of his least favorites.
He wrote it in 2 weeks for fast cash. That's seriously it, all he wrote for.
It's funny how that stuff works, and that turns out to be some of these guys' most prominent works.
Yeah,
he
it's like...
It's, like, his worst work. He needed money to, like, write some, like, non-fiction book that he wanted to work on, and nobody would give him money for it, so he wrote that real quick and then got money. And
Marcel, yeah, you think, like, this one's strange? Oh, sorry, go ahead, Ben.
Well, it's like so when Arthur Conan Doyle was a writer, he was like, if I'm the only known for Sherlock Holmes, I will have failed. And now that's all he's fucking
that in the Lost World.
See, you know, what's something I really like about this movie, though? Like, just, like, because I haven't seen this movie forever and I rewatched it. Like, my favorite thing about it is how these characters are so, like, evil, and yet they're so likable. Yeah. Like, they're just so likable.
I love that.
For, like, crazy.
Especially Alex.
Yeah, Alex, I think, is a very likable character.
And, I mean, I guess we can start off, you know, the whole movie starts off where they're drinking alcoholic milk at the Corolla milk bar. And it just, right from there, when that opening narration starts, and he's like, there I was, or whatever, I love that. And it just, like, zooms out of these characters, and you see this, this fucking weird future that they're living in, this milk bar with, like, milk coming out of the tits of these statues and stuff, and it's just
like,
great.
It's very Cuber.
Side note, a few years back, I saw this special screening of this movie, and Malcolm McDowell was there, and he was, like, answering questions. And so at the end of this, like, kind of, or when you first see Alex, he kind of, like, holds up his milk, right?
Mm-hmm.
As, like, a toast. And, like, they finished the take, and Kubrick went up to Malcolm and was like, well, why did you do that? Why did you, it looked like you were toasting. And he's like, oh, I did that on purpose.
Was he like?
And Kubrick was like, why? And Malcolm said, because I want everyone who watches this movie to know that they're in for one hell of a ride.
And I like that he does know you're watching, or at least reading the book, and he's the faithful narrator, and you're, you know, the listeners, and you're along with him. You're just another one of his droogs. And it's just like Sean said, the ultra violence in this movie. This is a violent movie, an extremely fun movie, but it is violence over the top.
I mean, you know, it's coming out in 1971.
Yeah.
So violent movies were just starting to really kind of...
Well, yeah, and it came out X-rated.
Like, yeah, exactly. I think it's one of the only X-rated movies to be nominated.
Two. That Oscar. And Midnight Cowboy.
Yeah.
Midnight
right.
Cowboy deals with, you know, just a bunch of, you know, like, drugs and stuff, what people can really do to survive. And so, I mean, and this was over in Europe, and people over there... Sometimes, like, it just seems like around that time we're much more prude. You know, well, just like nowadays, a lot of those movies will get, you know, their ratings, they'll have like 15 or 16. They have the age numbers, and it got like, it was just X over there. And so I heard that he had to, you know, ban it after a certain time because a lot of copycat crimes were coming out and people, like, were raping and killing people.
Oh, dude, it's still super popular.
Oh, I mean, it's
like every Halloween I see droogs, every Halloween. Yeah. It's like guaranteed.
I went as Alex as one Halloween.
It's fantastic. I mean, it's one of my favorite books, and it's one of my top five favorite movies of all time. And so that's why I'm really excited that we got to do this and that Marcel hadn't seen it yet. So
it's one of those movies that I've always seen as like one of those, like, you got to watch before
it's one of those
you
goats. You know, like you almost sometimes put these movies off because you don't want to, like, sully them in your brain. Like, if someone had never seen The Godfather, it just, like, sits there, and you're like, oh, I know that's a great movie, but you're like, is it better just knowing about it, or should I actually watch it?
Yeah, right.
You know,
I think it's the fear of overhyping it, you know? Like, you just, we live in a world where things get overhyped, and then, like, you just go watch something that's supposed to be amazing, and you're afraid it's going to be, like, absolute shit or something.
Well, yeah,
It was like Fight Club for me. I think I watched it only a couple years ago, like three years ago, and, like, I remember it was hyped the fuck up, especially in high school. It's like, don't talk about Fight Club, don't talk about Fight Club. And then it's like, I watched it, and it was actually, you know, it actually was still good.
Oh yeah, see, I've had some like that, like that Scarface. I hate Scarface. I think it's a terrible movie, and I had refused to watch it for a long time because of the hype, and then I did, and I was like, I should have just not watched it.
Yeah, I had the same. I had the, actually the same thing with Fight Club. Is I watched it like when I was a sophomore in high school after hearing about it for fucking forever, and I thought it was just okay.
See, I'm a huge Fight Club fan, but I'm a
really like Fight Club.
And I don't know if it's because I like Polonick's work that I really liked Fight Club, but man,
Tyler Durden.
Yeah. But back on like Clockwork Orange, what are some of your guys' favorite like scenes or whatnot? I mean, because this movie is super memorable.
Oh yeah,
I mean besides the singing in the rain bit, as fucked up as it is, it's
God,
so
I love that scene. Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you not like?
That's like the scene.
Yeah, I mean, how do you not like that rendition of Gene Kelly singing in the rain?
It's a movie-defining scene.
Yeah, I think you know in 100 years that people still know that scene. If movies are still relevant, yeah, that is still something that goes down. I mean, even as crazy as it is, this movie is still in like AFI's 100 best movies, and people love this movie.
Oh yeah,
it's in. No, I mean, you can't have a list without this one, pretty much.
Oh yeah, like something really too that I wanted to say is like the set pieces, like how everything looks. Oh my god, it looks so good. Everything just looks so good. Like everything feels like it's like this real yet like surreal like thing at the same time. Like it could really be a thing, but then at the same time you're like, wait, this isn't a thing, is it? Like I don't know. Yeah. Like it's so crazy how like it boggles your mind. Like that's how I always felt about this movie. It just always boggled my mind.
One of the things I really appreciate too is Kubrick as a cinematographer. I mean, if you look at I think my favorite shot in the movie is when they're walking down that tunnel before they beat that homeless guy up. And they're just silhouetted against the blue. Yes, it's so beautifully shot.
When they stop and the camera's facing them and you can still see all the shadows and everything.
Yeah,
I love that one. And it's just the whole movie is like I was saying, a favorite scene. It's hard for me to pick. I do love the singing in the rain. I love it when he beats the woman with the ceramic penis. I mean,
yeah,
no, it's fucking hilarious.
It's so weird. He like just looks around. He's like Nazi.
I've always tried to find that statue he has in his room, with the Christ, like
yes,
the chorus
the
line.
Weeping.
I want that so bad.
Yeah, and I love that when he's in prison. And he's like, yeah, I could see myself at the height of Roman fashion, joining along with, and he's like beating Christ. Cause
it's just fucked up.
Yeah. Nothing is off the table for Alex and his violence. I mean, but you gotta love this movie too, with just the whole moral issue and just where like the title comes from, Clockwork Orange, and the choice between good and evil. I really like that.
Yeah.
And so it's a pretty cool idea, especially back then. I love these dystopian future movies, and this one is just it's weird because obviously they got it wrong, but as they almost always do. But it is still, like I said, this is what 40 years later, almost 50 years now, and it's still great.
Yeah.
It's still great. It is still great.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, like, to me, like, the best part about it is that in its own way, it feels, I'm not saying, I mean, obviously, you know, film is art and stuff like that, but just, it's the way the dialogue is said from like McDowell and just all the other guys, just it's, but mainly McDowell himself. I mean, it just comes off so like, as fucked up as everything he's being said. It's like, it sounds beautiful. It's art the way it's just like it's poetry.
It sacrifices, I think, realistic tones and people's, like, how people would actually speak for this kind of poetic, grandiose way of speaking. And I think it's very effective. And, yeah, Malcolm McDowell is so good in this movie. Yeah. And especially since he was so, like, young and he's still doing shit, you know?
That's what I was going to say. It's weird that he didn't get bigger than he really did. I mean, obviously, he's been in other movies. It's like another really fucked up role. He's a Caligula. And that's another just fucked up movie completely.
Yeah. He's a pretty huge sci-fi actor too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Though that has his voice
I wish he wasn't like nowadays he's kind of downgraded in these B movies. He works with like Rob Zombie a lot, but like
he was in that TV show. He's in these kind
of
shitty
B movies, which kind of is a bummer.
Yeah, he was on that for a while. If you guys ever watched that.
Yeah, I watched that, but I remember like the first time I really like noticed him was from Fallout 3. He was like John Henry Eden, the president, so that's how I was like.
So you were watching this thinking, oh my god, there he is.
Yeah, kind of like just like, I was like, oh shit.
What was your guys' favorite death? Like the favorite, your favorite kill out of all of them?
Fuck.
I mean, you gotta love, like I said, death by a penis, but, and then he... He also rapes that woman to death. I mean, she dies later from complications, the writer said. But
that's
from shock. Yeah,
that's my penis. Like, what about you? Yeah. I don't know. Like, I really like probably the homeless man. Surprisingly, I just feel like it sets such a tone. They just kill a homeless man. Like, I don't know. It sets a tone for the movie that's just about to be like uber violent and crazy. And then.
Oh, he doesn't kill them.
You're talking about
he shows up later.
The same guy that shows up later. That remember him and the bum start attacking Alex, and he can't defend himself.
You're right.
Yeah, and it's interesting that like we say, oh, what's your favorite kill? But it's like
there's not a lot.
Yeah, there's not a lot of really death only, in this movie.
He does the first rape, and then he actually kills that woman, but he didn't even know he did himself. He said she's still breathing. Yeah.
And that's why he goes to jail is because he kills her.
Yeah, but should we talk about how the movie like goes a little bit? Like, I know we talked about how it starts off in the milk bar, and then they go do these random acts of violence. They dress up in these crazy costumes. Alex and his group of his droogs, they're like little gangs around London, and they go knock on people's doors and you know terrorize them. And then eventually his friends turn on him, and then he goes off to jail after an accidental murder. And that's really where it's almost two movies. It has a huge.
His friends turn on him because of his arrogant nature.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
that really pissed when he yelled at him for saying that the music sucked. You know.
Oh yeah, that's a great scene. That just like one of the things that defines Alex, because even though he is this crazy kid who seems to have no respect for law, he does appreciate art, and you see that in his whole life, and that means everything to him. But from the music, his love of Ludwig von, he has the music is everything to him in life, and so it's you take away his freedom, and that's a huge deal.
Well, when you get to his room, you see the fact that like you know it's like he has like Beethoven all over the place, and he's so when he plays it, he says like it was gorgeousness and gorgeousity made flesh, and all that, and I'm just like,
there you go. That's what art is to some people, and that's
amazing. I love that part in the movie where it like takes a break from like these horrible violent acts and just shows like. Alex picking up these girls at this record store and like he brings them home and fucks them.
What's sick about that? Like, in the book, they're 10 years old.
Yeah, in the book, they're super young. Yeah,
and,
right.
And see, Marcel, does that make it even odder to you that like at the first, the one that Billy Boy and them are raping, that's a 10-year-old girl. Even though in the movie, they have to have a woman, but and then those two girls he picks up and have sex with, those are 10-year-olds.
The fuck? Like the actual? They're not the actors,
but in the book. They're supposed to be 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the book they're 10, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense with the character and the whole story, I guess.
It's very odd. But then, you know, like, I don't know, how do you guys like it compared, like I said, there's a huge tonal shift. How do you like it from the first part of the movie where it is all the ultra-violence and crazy stuff to where he is in jail now and then you start seeing him, he's trying to get out and he decides to go with the Luvedco treatment or whatever. He's like, oh, I got to get out. And so they do this horrifying experimental treatment on him where they basically condition him to hate all violence. And so he gets sick.
It makes him physically sick, if he
And I think that violence. Is a really great plot device. And it's just they keep showing him all these, like, Nazi movies and people get – like, there's that one where, like, a woman is being – like, a bride is being hung and all these dogs attacking
she's getting raped.
Yeah, and he's like, this is stuff he normally would love, but then he's he says something along the lines of what is it? We only see the world how it is, and then it seems fake until he vidies it on the screen, and then the colors become real. Yeah. And it's just like it kind of describes movies, whole like, or film imitating life, or you know, art imitating life and life imitating art. It's kind of one and the same sometimes, and he definitely feels that way.
It's really artsy, but it's like really good artsy.
And it is Kubrick. Like we said, a lot of his movies are like this.
Okay, so my big kind of issue with Kubrick is, and I'm not trying to say he's not, like, an amazing director or whatever, but, like, he has this problem of the first half of his movies are really interesting, or one half of the movie is really interesting, and the other half is super boring. I think, in Full Metal Jacket, it's the whole,
that's the,
like,
one that defines it for me.
It's fucking...
Before they go to war, it's amazing, and I love the characters. Awesome. But this one I don't find that way. I enjoy this whole movie, and I enjoy The Shining pretty much all the way through.
I'd say The Shining. Well, like, and see, I like this movie a lot, but I think it does kind of lose some of its...
I can see some people how they... That's what I was saying. I definitely think that tonal shift...
Especially after he gets out of jail, I think it loses some of
its... I can see people, and that's about the last 40 minutes.
I think when he gets to the jail is when it kind of starts a little, like... When he's no longer going out in the town, like, with his droogs and everything like that, that's when it kind of, like, loses its...
It dragged a little bit,
like, And, when he got out of it.
Yeah, and going back to Kubrick, you know, a lot of people think that a lot of people think his movies are just really boring. Like, I know a lot of people just hate Dr. Strangelove. I love Dr. Strangelove.
I love Dr. Strangelove.
And I haven't seen it.
It's a lot of people, like, after you say that, a lot of people do find Kubrick boring, but think of 2001 Space Odyssey.
It depends on the movie for me. Like, 2001 A Space Odyssey is really boring for a really long time, but then it actually gets pretty good.
Yeah. I don't know if
I think Full Metal Jacket is super boring, like, all the way through it.
Metal's not my favorite.
I love Full Metal, like Ben said, up until about the war, and then the ending picks back up for me.
I don't know if you guys have ever seen Lolita, but it's super fucking boring.
I was looking up, because I was like, I've been looking into The Shining, just read it recently, and, like, I was looking up Kubrick's movies, and I was like, the whole premise around that movie just sounded so weird.
Well, the book is, like, about this, not to get too off topic, but the book is about this guy, like, falling in love with this teenager, right?
Like,
but, like, the whole movie is just him driving around with her in his car, like, getting all sweaty. It's, like, it's so boring.
And he basically marries the mom just to get with the daughter in that one.
That's dedication.
I mean, but, like, Barry Lyndon's boring.
Path of Glory is pretty hard for me to watch. That's one of his first.
I've actually never seen Paths of Glory. Of the ones I don't know.
Not like I hate it or anything, but it is a harder movie for me to watch compared to The Shining, Clockwork, Dr. Strangelove. Those are probably my three favorite. Eyes Wide Shut is pretty interesting, too. That's his last film.
I really liked Eyes Wide Shut. That was a good one.
Yeah, I like it a lot, too.
I thought AI was his last movie.
Oh, that's a bad sensation.
He didn't make AI.
AI is his movie, but then Steven Spielberg came out after his death and said they were great friends and stuff, which I've heard conflicting, like, reports about that. And he just, it's completely different. Like, it was supposed to all be based on Gigolo Joe, and they just completely flipped it on its head and made the kid the actor.
Yeah, the actual, like, shitty ending is what Kubrick wanted.
I was going to say. And it was to honor his death.
Yeah,
that's the reason
Spielberg made that movie so feel-goody and stuff like that, and, you got to wonder how Kubrick would have made that. And then there's always the whole Napoleon movie that never came out, Waterloo.
Which they're actually making a Napoleon...
the miniseries.
Like, miniseries right now under, like, basically... I think they're using the screenplay and everything
I believe it's Cary Fukunaga doing it, the director of True Detective.
True Detective.
Yeah, I believe he's...
Oh, the guy who was supposed to do it?
Yeah, he's a fantastic director, so I'm really excited about that.
Did you guys catch that little Easter egg for 2001 when he was in, like, the record store?
Yeah, it's right on the bottom of the shelf or whatever. I like that.
the girls are just sucking on their,
I think there's an Easter egg in The Shining, I believe, too. There's, like, a poster or something in one of the rooms or something. It might be the office at the first movie of the...
This is, like, 10 years before. That'd be interesting if he did that.
No, The Shining.
Oh, okay.
How do you guys... like the ending and how it happens, the whole of him. He makes it back to the house where he raped and, you know, murdered, or he raped and beat the writer and his wife. And now he's got this, like, coalition where he's actually anti-government. And this guy just happens to fall in their lap where, you know, he runs back into his buddies, Dim and what's his name, the other friend.
It kind of pissed me off when I saw it, because I was like, motherfuckers.
Oh, yeah.
In general, I mean, it pissed me off when they blinded him. I guess they said he was blind.
Yeah,
I don't know why. But when you see him, when you see them as like this fucking officer, like really, which I feel like it's like Kubrick saying something. It's like, look at these people who become officers, like, you know, look, you know, and whatnot. And it just has a lot of stuff with that, and it has a lot, it goes a little more political when it comes to like the ending.
Well,
But like, it's his demons coming back to like haunt him, basically. To show that even though he wants to change and whatnot, your actions
pay for his sins, like you said. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's got to meet this guy that obviously doesn't remember him, but he remembers messing with the writer and ruining his life. And then, the writer finds out later he's in the bathroom singing, singing in the rain. And the guy just goes in this convulsion thing.
Yeah.
I love that shot.
Like, this like spastic fit.
You figure if he didn't sing or anything like that, he would have something else probably would have
happened. Probably would have left that night or the next day. And you know what's funny is the bodybuilder guy is David Prowse.
Yeah, it's David Prowse. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to say. Darth Vader.
The body of Darth Vader. Yeah.
He was that's a professional bodybuilder.
That's how George Lucas
wanted
him for the role, is because he saw how big he is.
I think Lucas said something. He liked his stride and stuff and how his walk was because he's so huge. But yeah, David Prowse, he was a bodybuilder. And I guess he actually had the balls to say something to Kubrick about only wanting to do a few shots, because he had heard of Kubrick being rigorous with like hundreds of takes. And he said, I don't want to carry that guy up and down the stairs a whole bunch of times. He said, and I think said it still took 3 or 4 takes to do that. But like, you know, Kubrick's infamous for that. Like, I think the scene in The Shining where Jack Nicholson and Shelley Duvall are walking up the stairs, I think they did that like something like 160 times.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he wanted to torture Shelley Duvall.
Yeah. Well, he said he didn't believe she was a good actress, and so he wanted to really terrorize her.
Well, was he wrong?
No, because she's terrible in almost everything.
She's so bad in that movie.
And she's, I hate to say this, but she is just terrible to look at.
Is it like, okay, I don't know if Kubrick wanted her to be like...
Well, she looks terrified.
...hearted or
well, she's completely senseless, like, and maybe that is like the whole thing.
That's how she is.
Well, maybe they need those two strong, you know, Jack Nicholson's the over-the-top, nobody could match his personality in any room. And then you put in with Shelley Duvall, you know? So maybe why they want that separation, but.
Well, Jack Nicholson's a fucking psychopath.
Yeah.
One of the things I like about Kubrick, and he does it in this movie, but he does it more so in like The Shining. He doesn't obey the law of thirds. Shots.
You. Yeah, like beginning, so, like, middle,
when,
end.
So when you the rule is when you have a shot that's like a widescreen shot, you're supposed to keep most of the stuff to 1/3 of the side of the shot, but he always does everything with like 1-point perspective.
Yeah.
And that's like dead on. And like... it just makes you feel gross. And he uses it in a really
good way, I think he shot most of this movie in wide angle to make you like to have like a weird sense of almost like a dreamlike feel to it, and so it's really strange. Brian De Palma does that a lot as well.
Mm-hmm. My favorite thing about Kubrick, though, is I a lot of directors like do this, but like with him especially, I just feel like everything he does is on purpose. Like everything, you know, like everything like you see in the shot is just always done on purpose. Like where the camera's set, where even little props are, like everything always feels like it's literally done on purpose.
Well, that's because he was a fucking crazy person and and made people do takes 100 times until
you
he
have
was
to
happy.
Wonder what like a set would look like. Because even I've heard Jack Nicholson just say like read about it, he just like fucking hated Kubrick, and like I mean just and even like Malcolm McDowell said afterwards he thought they were best of buds, and then afterwards Kubrick never returned his phone calls and rarely ever spoke to him again the rest of his life.
Yeah,
and he said that Malcolm McDowell like really took, and I've heard that a lot. I don't know if he talked about that Ben at all, but he hated Kubrick up until I guess his death. And
he did not talk about that. He said he really. I've seen him say interviews like he did respect him a lot during the filming of the. I've even watched a document or an interview with him in the early 70s, and he's like, oh, he's an amazing director, blah blah blah. So
thought they were like best friends or whatever, and I guess he tried to like meet back up with him or try to do other things, and Kubrick never even returned phone calls. And I guess he stayed friends with his wife, Kubrick's wife, and I guess after he died he kind of like let those demons go or whatever. But he said he hated Kubrick after the movie, which is so strange, but I guess maybe he was a young actor, so he kind of maybe didn't know how Hollywood type stuff worked.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Kubrick seemed like he was really demanding. So I mean, that could get on anybody's nerves.
I think it's more like what Ben was saying. He's crazy. He would call. Yeah. I remember there was a story where he called Stephen King like at 3 a.m. asking him what he thought about God and like life and shit like that. Like,
I do think you're right. I think he was a crazy madman and all he cared about was the film.
And, which is cool.
Yeah.
Hindsight. And at the end of Beyond, when it's executed and everything like that, it's great. But
yeah.
So, okay. We're kind of getting to that point where, what do you guys think? Like, what would your rating be for this movie? What about you, Ben?
It's one of my favorite movies of all time, even though I do think it drags a little bit after the first act. So I'd probably give it a 9 because I think it still holds up really well, and I think it's beautiful to look at, it's interesting to watch, and I can't think of a reason why I would give it a lower rating than that.
What about you, Marcel?
I had to give it a 9 as well. This is the first time that I've watched it, and there's something to go. This is the second only other Kubrick movie that I've seen, and I loved his style on The Shining. It had its very own, like, you know, every shot, like Alonzo was saying, was done on purpose. Every angle, everything was done meticulously. But more so, I love like that almost cynical view that Kubrick has on life. It's very cold. Some people don't like that. But I think that makes for good filmmaking, it makes for good subtext, it makes for good conversation in film. And to me, it's like just with this movie itself, what it had to say about society, politics, and just like, you know, and everything like that, it just worked really well. And while I wouldn't say it's not one of my favorite movies, and I do like Shining more than this out of the two that I've seen, it's up there, and I'm happy to have it in my library. So yeah, 9 out of 10, solid movie.
Alonzo?
Yeah, for me, that's hard. Like, that's hard. I don't know whether to say a 9 or a 10, because I do love the shit out of this movie. It's like, I don't know, it's just so different. It's like, and I feel like it's almost like the first of its kind being so fucking just weird and like, and I don't know, like, that's a hard one. Rewatching it again, like, I will agree with what Ben said. The second act does tend to feel like it drags a little more than like the first time I ever watched it. So I think now, watching it now, maybe knowing a little bit more about film, I would have to give it a 9. But I still love the shit out of this movie. It's definitely in my top 5, if not top 10. Like, I love this movie.
Sean?
I'd probably give it a solid 8. It's probably my favorite Kubrick movie. But there's always, yeah, little parts of Kubrick movies that I just can't really get past normally. That just drag it down a little bit for me, but the parts that are good are really good. So I mean, I can watch this one over and over again, so yeah, I'll give it an 8.
And great. My kind of final thoughts and rating, this is, like most other one else said, it's one of my favorite Kubrick movies. It is my favorite, I will say that. It's in probably my top 5 favorite movies of all time. I think, although not a perfect movie, it is a perfect for me movie, and it's one of my favorites. I'd give it I hate saying like 10 out of 10, but it's a great movie for me. I don't think you can get much better than A Clockwork Orange, and so I would give it a 10. I think everyone needs to watch it. I think it's a great movie. It still holds up 50 years later. And
oh, yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't feel like it's a 50-year-old movie to me.
No, it doesn't.
And so I do appreciate that, and I don't know. It's something about the language and just the art and just the way it feels. I'll probably still be watching this movie 50 years from now. And so I'm really excited we got to do it for our first one. And I think that's all I have to say about it.
And that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah. And I know, okay, kind of getting off Clockwork Orange, Sean actually picked the second movie we're going to be doing, Birth by Jonathan Glazer. Right, Sean?
Yes, that is correct. Yes.
And I don't think any of us have seen that. Alonzo, have
you? Yeah, I don't think I've seen that either.
So, I was.
That's what intrigued me about it.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to pick a movie that, like, nobody else had seen, so.
When Jonathan Glazer is odd. Like, if you've ever seen Sexy Beast or Under the Skin, his movies are fucking weird. So if this is anything like that, I'm sure it's going to be. That's the middle one between these two.
What's it called?
Birth. It's got like Nicole.
I liked Under the Skin a lot. So
I just watched that recently and I loved it. So
I liked it a lot.
So
Yeah, Birth is a really odd movie. So.
And yeah, for you guys at home listening, if you have any movies you want us to maybe talk about, just let us know. I mean, we're going to be picking these for the most part, but I mean, we'll always, if something pops up that we don't know about.
Nothing's off the table.
Yeah, and we're going to be doing this every 2 weeks, I think. And so these are all going to be film podcasts. It's going to be the pretty much film side part of Pretty Much Geek. And so we'll still have those normal podcasts. And so
yeah, we're going to be getting the other Pretty Much Geek ones. I think we're going to be working right now on it might be out by the time that you're watching or listening to this right now, but the Doctor Strange one will be out for everyone who can join us for that one. And the second one we're going to be doing this month is going to be Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, which Ben, I know, try to hide that hard on that you have right now. But those podcasts are going to be half and half. It's going to be half of a movie podcast and half of it's going to, or actual review, and then half of it's going to be the end of the rumors and bullshit that comes with the comic book movie and video game medium. It's all that fun stuff. But yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's where we're probably going to cut it off for this one. And this was the Pretty Much Film podcast. I'm Justin.
I'm Marcel.
I'm Ben.
It's just us, Ben, I guess.
Yeah, I'm Sean.
All right. Take it easy, guys. I'm singing in the rain. Just singing in the rain. What a glorious feeling. I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above.